Welcome, everyone, back to Red Spotlight. I'm your host, Alexis Soto, joined by, for the first time in, as a matter of fact, a matter of months already. It's kind of crazy to believe, even though he's been on this podcast for weeks on end, for years on. It came to a point this past, you know, few weeks where he just wasn't available, but now he's back. It's David Francisco. David, where have you been? And how long has it been since you've been on here? I think the last time you were on a podcast, we were talking about, what, House of the Dragon or something?
Yeah, it was for sure House of the Dragon. I never got a chance to talk about the last episode of that, or Andor.
Or anything?
Yeah.
I mean, anything that's come out in the last 2 months, mm-hmm. which is hilarious because, as we said in... we said this as we were ramping up to this time of the year, that this is always, these last 2 months feels always like there's like at least 5 months worth of content smushed in these last 2 months particularly, especially. And year after year, you know, it's kind of like all of us in our own little worlds kind of like are in a mad scramble to like watch as many things as possible that are available to us. And this past season that we're in right now might be one of the harder ones because there's just so much of both like films and television shows. Ironically enough, this is actually the best I've been able to keep up with most of the season's offerings, which we'll get into our discussions here. But it's just been, it's been a lot. And of course, it's also the season of the holidays. Yeah. It's really inconvenient for us to really meet as often as we once did because of, you know, everything that is going on, and that happens to be quite a lot. So, today's episode will just be seemingly a loose conversation to catch us up on some of the things that David hasn't really had a chance to discuss or really give much of an opinion on. I do want to let people know, at some point, Peter Martinez is going to come back soon because he now has some free time. Yeah. So he has seen some of the recent offerings, three of which we just saw recently together. We went to go see, he hadn't seen The Fablemans by Steven Spielberg, and we went to go see that one alongside The Banshees of Inisherin. Hilariously, though, we saw those movies, I think, a day or two before it dropped on PVOD. Now that, you know, which is how it is these days, you know, like a movie's out in theaters for like, what, a week, and then it's out on PVOD. You know, because Banshees of Inisherin right now is currently available to stream on HBO Max, and Fablemans is on premium video on demand, which if you'd like, you could purchase for $25 and then have your digital version of it, which I did, by the way. So if you want to see that, it's now on our Vudu Movies Anywhere. It's there for anybody to see.
Oh.
If you haven't had the chance to see it just yet. And of course, Banshees is on HBO Max, which we'll get to all of that as well. And then we also saw, of course, Avatar, which I know you did as well. The Way of Water, which is just recently out in theaters. And I guess the teases that I have for you guys for that particular podcast is, you know, get ready for a lot of like, you know, love of cinema and, you know, just a lot of nice things to say, but then also get ready for a lot of rants because there's already been a lot of talking points that have been swirling around with certain movies and certain takes and it's been so much. So there is all of that, as well as the fact that there's just been so much news. So, yes, I didn't already mention, this is episode number 426, I believe. And, you know, look, there's so many things to start off with, and I'll do my best to, we're going to aim for an hour and a half tops podcast. So we're going to do my best to, like, you know, manage over these things. But if we're going to start off with any bit of news, a lot has been shaken up since you and I last spoke, which is, you know, that James Gunn and Peter Safran are now the heads of the new DC Films unit. A lot of stuff has, you know, that came out of left field. Of course, what's also happened is Bob Chapek is no longer the head of the Disney company. Now it's Iger again. See how much has happened since, like, it's crazy to think how much has happened. And even more still to the point, in regards to Gunn and Safran, we've also had a trailer for Gunn's projects, which is, you know, Guardians 3, his holiday special came out. All the while, of course, a lot of the old talent DC films is seemingly being dismissed before our very eyes. It's fascinating, but I guess the two things, and I'm sure everyone's already heard of this, is the idea that Wonder Woman 3 is canceled, Patty Jenkins is dismissed, Gal Gadot's future as Wonder Woman is up in the air. What's not in the up in the air is Henry Cavill, because hilariously enough, there was validity to the rumors that there was in development another a follow-up to Man of Steel with Henry Cavill going to return, but with Gunn now in charge, that's been canceled. Henry Cavill will no longer be Superman. And for me personally, we can talk about, you know, the personal extent to which these stars have been affected. But I think, to me, the most interesting news out of all of this is the idea that James Gunn is writing a Superman movie. That is particularly tantalizing. And I seriously hope he considers directing it. Because I feel like anything he touches is like gold.
Yeah.
And hilariously, I think what we've seen kind of like manifest in the last several weeks is a lot of people who, let's just say for lack of a better, I don't think anybody has loved, but people who are just like diehard DC fans and like liked a lot of the talent that has been involved in the films up to this point are obviously angry. Superman's fans are angry. The Snyder fans will always be angry. And so they've kind of like taken out all their anger into this like idea that somehow James Gunn is like inadequate, incapable, and not up to the job to do this, which is hilarious because, I mean, of course they would say that because they're upset that they're that he's getting rid of all the people that they like. I mean, duh, they would obviously say that. But it's just like, when you look at the track record that James Gunn has already like, you know, laid out. I mean, he just made Peacemaker earlier this year. At least we forget Peacemaker was amazing. Television, just amazing work of art in general. And I think with Peacemaker, for me, it just sealed the deal that really nobody understands maybe DC characters more than James Gunn did. Now, that isn't to say that his flavor is the only one that can exist. But the idea that he somehow is like not up to the job.
he's the only one that's made like some of the best superhero movies. So
clearly, yes. And I think it's not an easy job for sure, but there have already been some pretty big moves in just a few number of weeks that, you know, he's been on the job basically. And, you know, to me, it's like, I, at the end of the day, there are a lot of these fans who are most concerned with the cinematic universe as a whole. I've already expressed my feelings for years now. I don't give a shit. Mainly because I think Marvel has taken it up to as far as it can go. And now it's come to the point, at least with Marvel, that their cinematic universe is like infringing upon the quality of all the individual projects. Whereas in DC, because the universe as a whole has always been shite, I mean, it's always been up to the individual stories to kind of like make up the ground and like stand on their own and be, you know, memorable, like Aquaman or Shazam or Peacemaker or Suicide Squad or the Batman. So it's never like in the last, ever since like Justice League or Justice League, as people will call it, the Joss Whedon Justice League from 2017. Ever since that failed, like, to me, I've not really like looked at those movies as a group of universes or a group of anything. They're just individual films. And I think for all of us here at Red Spotlight, we've championed for a long time now that that model is the best one to move forward, to just focus on individual stories and make the individual pieces as best that they could possibly be instead of just building shit up that ultimately goes nowhere. And I feel like with Gunn, he is going to have the best approach to that. I think he understands that, yes, from a business standpoint, there will be some interconnectivity, but he understands that that should never come, you know, in the place of a story or come before the story. And I feel like we're at the point, at least I am, confident in saying that seeing enough of Kevin Feige's output in 2022, he has lost sight of that in a big way. He has lost sight of the idea that the universe comes second and the story comes first. At Marvel, that is no longer the case. And so as far as like going forward, I'm excited, David.
Also, as him being a director and someone who actually writes stories, you know, he can look at all the scripts coming out and going like, yeah, this
good seems point.
Like a good story. This, but also he can go, I can see the style, what kind of style this movie is going to be.
Yes,
when they make it, you know, and that's something that's gonna be excited for the DC universe. Is that I do think that he's gonna give other directors the chance to put in their own style into the movie and make each one different, and hopefully he can connect them perfectly. I mean, who knows? The interconnectivity of it, who knows what's going to happen. But, like, at the very least, I feel confident that the DC movies are going to have... are going to be a lot more fun now.
I mean, they should be, because they haven't been... I mean, some have, but, you know, as a whole, I think it's pretty clear that they've been far too inconsistent. Even after Justice League happened, they still had a mixed match of different people coming in with varying different, you know, results. For every Aquaman, you had a Birds of Prey. For every Batman, you had a Black Adam. So it's like, it's a give and take. And then Shazam, nobody saw. And that was like one of the best ones. Here they have a sequel. I want to push back on the idea that some people... are saying that this takes the you know, the wind out of, like, Shazam 2 and Aquaman 2. It's like, yeah, going forward, there probably won't be more stories. But, hey, there's still movies that exist. There's still follow-ups to films that were liked well enough to earn a sequel. I would think that people would be like, hey, well, you know what? If it's the last time with these characters, well, hey, let's just let's make it about them instead of, like, their place in an overall... overarching universe. I think people still obsess too much over the idea that in order for, you know, any, like, of these characters to have any, like, validity, they have to be canon to a universe. And I just wish that, like, people would, like, wake up and smell the roses. Like, no, look at what Marvel, like, and people don't want to, like, reconcile the idea. A lot of people out there have begun to feel that Marvel Studios' output has let them down. We've seen that in the reactions and in the grosses and in the reviews. But they don't seem to understand why it's letting them down. Like, at no point does it occur to them that it's the cinematic universe as a whole that is keeping these projects well below the quality of what they should be. It is getting in the way. And look no further than Miss Marvel. Miss Marvel, who, you know, I read an article today about, you know, it was in Screen Rant. I think I shared it with you guys about, you know, Marvel's Phase 4 TV shows. And, you know, it made me kind of realize, yeah, for the longest time this year, I would have said, even in spite of the finale that kind of ruined everything, Miss Marvel was easily the best TV show. But, you know, the further removed we are from that finale, it makes it worse. It makes it look so much worse. Like, that was such a letdown. And so many things in retrospect were so half-baked and lazy and poorly fleshed out that... while I do think the finale to Moon Knight is rather dull, but it still, I guess, ended competently. There wasn't anything at the end that ruined it. So as a whole, I would say Moon Knight has been the most successful just because it's been so separated from everything else, you know? Yeah. It still had, a little bit of the familiarity and the trappings of the MCU, but at least there was that separation. Where Ms. Marvel, unfortunately, was... well, mutants, I guess. I mean, we still, months later, we can't even. And now, like, I know we didn't go into much depth into it because, quite frankly, I don't care anymore. But because I've been going to the cinema and I've been seeing that damn Quantumania trailer so many times, you know, what you had shared with me, it always, you know, I look at it and, like, okay, that part of the quantum realm, whatever, is at the heart of Kang's, I guess, fortress. Those rings do kind of sort of maybe look the same thing as the 10 rings that Shang-Chi has and I guess the bangles that Miss Marvel had. And if that's the case, that's really convoluted. That's really convoluted. And in what way does that tie anything up from a thematic standpoint, which should be the most important standpoint? So going forward, I think James Gunn is a gifted storyteller. And I think he particularly, I would say, is... gifted with working with comic book characters and understands what makes them tick and understands what makes them likable. And I feel like that's been an aspect of DC and the filmmakers that they've hired, particularly looking no further than Zack Snyder, who just clearly didn't understand why people like these characters to begin with. And I don't think he himself liked those characters. I think he just liked his version of those characters, which really were not what people wanted out of them. You know, I just watched Black Adam today. It was so hilarious how the crux of the movie was that heroes don't kill. And all I could think of in that moment was all the times Superman killed people viciously in both Man of Steel and particularly Batman v Superman. I think he just like flew through a person in the beginning of BVS. And they're supposed to exist in the same universe. It's that kind of like disconnect that I think has been one of the reasons this universe, if you want to call it that, just hasn't worked. And look, I can sympathize with people who really liked Henry Cavill and Gal Gadot in those roles. Mm-hmm. But I mean, at the end of the day, they were part of projects that failed repeatedly, not just once.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look back at the track record, this is pre-COVID, back when, you know, these pictures made $1 billion plus easily. Now it's like you have to climb a mountain and then some just to make that number. But back then, look at the idea that a Superman film came out in 2013, that a Batman versus Superman film came out in 2016, and in 2017, a Justice League movie came out. None of those movies made $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
None of them. And more to the point, those films and the lack of coherent storytelling in these last 10 years of DC, I've long argued, have damaged the reputation and the popularity of Superman and Batman. Look at this recent Batman film. Look how amazing it was. And even that couldn't cross $1 billion. Yes, we're in the after years of COVID, and that's changed the viewing habits of people to go out to the movies. We understand that. And that definitely factored in. But like, the idea that a Batman film couldn't make $1 billion, something went wrong. And I feel it's the years and years and years of fuckery that and just the inability of the people at DC and Warner Brothers to have any kind of consistency. That's been the key. The thing that's been missing here is any kind of consistency. You go into one movie and it's amazing, and you go into another and it's dog shit. Now, with Marvel, it's a different kind of problem where every movie is just kind of like coasting and medium and the same. That's a different issue altogether. So, listen, with Henry Cavill, I do want to say part of me does feel like he's getting what he deserves because I don't think it was cool of him to just leave The Witcher. Like, he very clearly and publicly left the show. Mm-hmm. And like clearly was beneath him. And well, you could also say, well, maybe he really thought he wasn't going to be able to make the schedule because they had promised him that he's going to have a movie. Yeah. Maybe you can say that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I don't blame him for leaving The Witcher. I enjoyed the show, but I feel like it wasn't as popular as probably he wanted it to be.
No, it wasn't. And not that I care for the show. I haven't seen it. But I think the issue with Cavill is what else did he have going on? He left a stable job for a job he thought was going to happen. Now it's not happening. Mm-hmm. And then for whatever reason, he hasn't been able to find much work. So he's in a precarious situation. The other thing I want to say is what makes this all the more hilarious is that Dwayne The Rock Johnson had his head so far up his own ass. He, for a lot of reasons in general, but he really thought that the movie that he was in was going to be so uber successful that behind the scenes, he was moving chess pieces to take not complete, but as much control as possible over creative control, I want to say, over his corner of the DC universe. Which is insane to me. Like, dude, you're an actor. Like, who the fuck do you think you are? I'm sorry, but like, it's just so strange to me. That would be like if, like, I don't know, Chris Evans was like, you know what? I'm the only person that has anything of value to say on Captain America. And so I'm now going to go to Kevin Feige and demand that I have like complete creative control over this. This is so weird, and I think is indicative of somebody of a personality who, quite frankly, has been far too used to getting everything he wants and then some. You know, it's so crazy to me. Like, he was really jockeying for that position. And then, of course, when Gunn was hired, he was so embarrassed, didn't say anything. Like, the whole thing with Black Adam has been such a colossal embarrassment for him. The movie didn't do that well. Everybody who saw it was like, I guess that was a movie. I mean, I guess it was a movie, and I guess it was okay at best. And they hype up a cameo to the point where of Henry Cavill, where that's all anybody's talking about, not the movie itself. So you make the story of, oh, Henry Cavill's back. A month later, that isn't the case whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But a month later, the film's, you know, doing even less good at the box office. And so what do? You get your team to massage some numbers around, and you leak it to one of the trades deadline, and you publish a story that claims, it's actually going to make some money. It's not going to lose money. And hilariously, he's also unfollowed Black Adam on Instagram.
I heard about that. Oh my god, that's
and I love how butthurt he is over this. I really do, because I mean, he does have egg on his face. Like, he basically used his entire celebrity to promote this movie. He had a big premiere and shit. Like, he was hyping it up, and then it ended up being a colossal failure. You know what? I'm sorry, Dwayne, but like, I think you get what you deserve when every movie you make is the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And every role you take is the exact same thing. Also, I saw the movie today. It wasn't.
It's not good.
It's not.
No, it's like, there were some parts I got so annoyed. I hated the whole "the man in black" or "tell them the man in black sent you" or something, like his catchphrase in the movie. This is in the movie that he's trying to come up with the catchphrase, yes, or something, and I'm like, this catchphrase makes no sense. And I hate that one thing of the what was it? Teth Adam. Teth. Seems like an old-fashioned name. You should pick a new one. And I'm like, the whole time, I'm like, Teth Adam is actually a pretty badass name. I don't know why you would ever change it.
I so agree with you. There was no need for that. But obviously, it was there because they thought they needed a gag to, like, get to the name.
And they needed a reason to change the name to Black Adam, which, I don't know.
Which they never say in the movie. It just, like...
What was it?
A tease?
Yes, it's fantastic. Wait, say that again?
Oh, the fan four stick?
The fan four stick.
I forgot that happened.
Yeah. I don't mind these kind of stuff, but I'm kind of like, oh, I can't back up what you're saying. And then that whole thing with Dwayne Johnson, like, basically trying to take over. You know, it happens. It's happened before where, like, the actors do, like, really take control of a certain project. You know, Ryan Reynolds, I mean, that dude kind of has, like, full control of Deadpool, yes, and all that. But, you know, just Dwayne Johnson, though, he just overreached, and I don't think he really knows anything about the whole Black Adam character at all. Unlike Ryan Reynolds, who, like, he seems to know everything about that character. That was another one in my mind. Who also did something.
Well,
like that.
The difference obviously here is with Reynolds is that was a character he had long since been passionate about and has been championing to get a movie made out of. The difference with Dwayne is that he saw this as an opportunity to, like, brighten his star even bigger than it is. Mm-hmm. I think it's so very clear with that. And you know what makes, I think what also exposes him in a way is what I think came to light this past week, which was, you know, some fans were obviously a little disheartened at the idea that there would never be a showdown between Zachary Levi's Shazam and The Rock's Black Adam. I don't know why there never was, because I think it's come to light that, you know, he said something really dismissive of that. You know, he turned down an opportunity to cameo in Shazam because evidently that's not something he has to do to stay in the big leagues, as he calls it, which is really kind of a dick move. Yeah. You know, say what you want about Ezra Miller, and you can say a lot about him, but he didn't pull that kind of crap. He actually cameoed in Peacemaker. So did Jason Momoa. So it's like, that seems not the kind of person I would want around, personally. If that's the attitude you're going to have, no. No. And back to the movie. I felt like I was watching... not a movie. It felt like I was watching, like, a movie being, like, after it died, and you know, we're like dissecting all the different pieces, and maybe it's just because I've become so cynical, but like I not for a single moment did I take the film seriously as a story, or like did I buy anything going on, because it just felt so manufactured. Every little thing, every little choice, every little line of dialogue, every little thing that they were going for, everything was so like focus group tested down to a T. There was no charisma by anybody, you know, not even Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who apparently, you know, has built his entire brand off his charisma. There wasn't anything like that here. There was no humanity. It was just so hollow and dull, and a movie I'll never, ever, ever, ever again see in my life. Don't bother wasting any moments of your time watching this movie. It has nothing to say.
It really felt like I was kind of watching pieces of other stories.
Yes.
I don't know if that makes sense. Like,
part of it like, felt a little CW. Just, and I don't mean to insult the CW. I think what they do sometimes works really well. But all the stuff with like Noah Centineo and all, that felt, and the Justice Society, that felt like it was out of a CW TV show. And that didn't feel to me like it organically flowed with whatever this story was going to be, like at all. There was, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, what I meant with like pieces of a story is just, you know, you mentioned the Atom Smasher and Cyclone characters. You know, it just felt like they were in a part of a movie, and then it was the mom and the son.
Yes,
they were a different part in the movie.
Uh huh.
And then the son with Black Adam. It didn't feel like everything fit together.
No, it felt very random. Then,
like the only one that I actually did care about was Hawkman and Dr. Fate. Like,
yes.
Their stories was the only one that I actually like did somehow care about. But there was so much history behind that and so little time to really like develop that it didn't work in the end.
No, it didn't. And I mean, as far, I laughed so hard when like at the end of the movie, Noah Centineo says to like, I believe Adam Smasher's his name. He says to Black Adam, "We made a pretty good team." He's like, "Yeah, what the fuck are you talking about? You put him in a prison? At no point were you ever a team." Like, what? Like, you see, the dialogue here is terrible. And you know what? I'm going to go off on this rant right now. I know everybody right now, even people who liked The Way of Water, are going off about like Jim Cameron's like lines of dialogue that are corny and cheesy. You know what? They are corny and cheesy, but you know what? There's actual meaning and sentiment behind it that actually enhances the story. When you look at here in Black Adam and all those lines like we just mentioned, they're so artificial.
Mm-hmm.
They're just there to be there. There's no meaning behind those words. Fucking attack the dialogue here, not in The Way of Water.
And so you mentioned the line of Atom Smasher, you know, "We made a pretty good team." That's only because they did work together in the comics. Atom Smasher is supposed to be like a anti-hero too.
Oh, Black really? Adam. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And I didn't know that.
Yeah. When Black Adam actually takes over that city, Atom Smasher like actually agrees with like his methods of justice and all that, and they start working together every once in a while. So that's really the only reason why that's there, and it is artificial. Like it literally is artificial, that line. But then with The Way of Water, though, sure, corny dialogue, cheesy lines, whatever, but great performances. I got so excited about the villain in The Way of Water, because like when you rewatch the first one, he's fucking awesome.
He is.
It's just, he's intimidating, you know?
Yes.
And he has charisma and all that. And oh my gosh, you can't deny that one scene in the first Avatar where they escape through the plane and he just fucking opens the door and he's holding his breath the whole time trying to shoot them and everything. Like, that's such a badass thing.
You're talking about Stephen Lang. He commits in that role. And
fuck, yeah.
He commits it. And I think that's where it... I also want to say, for people who feel like, you know, Cameron is unique in that kind of dialogue, like, I feel like every movie that came out in the 80s, if it came out right now, they would not be looked at as good movies. Like I was talking about this with Peter. If you've seen Aliens, right? Oh my God, Aliens is one of the best action movies ever made. I fucking love Aliens. It's so horrific and horror as well. Oh my God, love that movie. But you know what also is a beloved classic, but also in a really unique way, kept at a distance because it's not looked at as cool enough. E.T. the Extraterrestrial. If that movie came out today, it would be laughed at. It would be dismissed. Mm-hmm. When you look at the performances and the way that people talk, you know, tastes and styles change as the decades go. And there was a way of acting in the 80s that doesn't translate, I guess, to what people want today. It just doesn't translate. There's like a disconnect there. Like, I don't know what it is that people feel that somehow it's, you know, overacting. And some people would even say it's like kind of bad. But as far as DC is concerned, it's a wait and see yeah. kind of thing. And I guess we can go there. Next to the Avatar of it all. So look, this is pretty interesting. This is a movie that for the longest time, most people have not cared about. Just really at all, even though it was the highest grossing film ever made. You and I both went to go see this movie in its re-release a few months back in 3D. Or at least I did in the 3D. I don't know if you saw it in 3D as well.
I didn't see that one in 3D, but I did watch the new one in 3D.
Yeah. I mean, nobody on this podcast, I'm not even sure many people actually care for 3D. Mm-hmm. But with like with this movie, it's like, okay, I'll make an exception with it.
Yeah.
We're going to get into a lot. We can talk about the movie right now, The Way of Water. I mean, I'll say this. I'm probably going to, it's on Disney Plus right now. I might watch it again, the first Avatar, because I am curious to see if I think of that movie any better because to me of how much I liked the second one. But I was really surprised with how much I really liked the second movie.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it in the 3D format and it was 3 hours and 12 minutes long. And oh my God, I was tired that day. I was so tired. I was like constantly yawning because I was like falling asleep in a little, cause I was just so tired that week. But I had the time of my life. I had the time of my life just being in there. And I was like, you know, previously I would say that Dune was the film that made me feel this way the closest, which was at least in that theater where the screen wasn't sufficient. In this sense, watching The Way of Water, the screen disappeared. There was like no four walls. I felt like I was there.
Mm-hmm.
The 3D is, again, I don't like it, generally speaking, but it was fully immersive. Mm-hmm. It was all encompassing. There is, I think, a lot of validity to the point that people make that a lot of this does feel like a nature documentary, only you're there.
Yeah.
And you're and these are living, breathing people and creatures, and transportative is like the phrase I keep coming up with, which is like you're no longer a person sitting there at a theater. Like you've traveled through space. You're at Pandora, and I walked out of that screening just at a loss for words because, like, I don't think I've ever experienced anything quite like that. It was something special, that's for sure. I don't think, rather unique even so. I feel like, for me, there was very little to complain about in the movie. Same. Like, I've seen a lot of reactions that have a lot to complain about.
I just don't see it the same way as they do. You know, like no. You mentioned, like, oh, it felt like a nature documentary. I'm like, okay, but it's a nature documentary about aliens. Like, how are you not finding that fascinating? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, and like, I see all these people, you know, they'll talk about how they love some animal and some other piece of media or whatever. You know, they get into the world building of it all, you know? And just, I'm not kidding you. I've read this book called The Name of the Wind. And in that one, the world building is like top notch. Okay, they even get into the currency of it. You know, they'll tell you like, oh, this means half, this is half, quarter. Like, you know, it's not like an actual coin. It's literally like a pizza slice of a coin. You know, and mm-hmm. just they get into that much detail of it, And like those same people that I like that kind of stuff, they see this movie and they're like, I'm bored. And I don't understand like why you see it that way, you know? And so I don't know. And I hate this whole thing of, you know, James Cameron's, you know, praising himself for trying to create this whole new world. It's like, yeah, he created a world. Let him. It's his fucking movie.
Yeah, I all the things people seem to have like against James Cameron, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Especially since like we're living in a world where there are plenty of people to have, you know, grievances toward. Look no further than Elon Musk, Kanye West, Donald Trump. There are plenty of odious people out there that you can go after. I don't see James Cameron as being the person, especially since like, you know, his movies are very overtly political. Mm-hmm. Like he's not subtle at all. So, you know, David, there have been several films this year where I would say there are many movies every year where there is a response and I'm left quite baffled. Maybe not more so than this year. Yeah. Because like I don't know if you've seen Nope yet. Mm-hmm. By Jordan Peele, but I that's my favorite Jordan Peele movie. And I know like, hey, he made Get Out, that's the masterpiece. And it's like, yeah, sure, whatever. But like I really, really connected with Nope. And when it came out, it was like kind of like, eh, it's good, I guess. Anyway, let's move on to the next one. Oh, okay. Thor: Love and Thunder came out. And while there are legitimate criticisms of the movie, I don't think anybody engaged with those critiques. I think people just like dismissed it as dog shit. Mm-hmm. And the worst affront that has ever, like, I don't know, come across their face. But there were themes. There were actual themes and arcs in those movies. And like, it's bad. It's bad. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then with this one to me, though, is the one that's made me the most angry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made me angrier by the day, because when I was watching this movie, I don't think it's the best thing ever made. I don't think it's the best movie of the year. Yeah. But damn, if it's not one of the most entertaining experiences I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
you said
it
clearly.
Like, it's just immersive. Like, I am there in that world, and I want to be in that world, and I want to know more about it. And like, that's really all that I loved about the movie, you know. And I mean, I think they did a good job of like the character developments of.
Actually care about the characters this time.
I actually care about.
There's a big difference in this in the first movie.
You know, it wasn't higher stakes, but the stakes were still high for me. You know, because I care about these characters, and I mean, like I said, the villain was so cool.
He's
just entertaining to watch. You know, and this is probably not gonna make my top five movies of the year. Maybe top 10. I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of movies this year, so chances are it is.
I've seen approximately like 64, 65 movies, just about. And that's usually my average of a year. Mm-hmm. And I've still got more to go. But that's about, between any given year, I see between 60 and 80 movies. So I'm at the bottom end of like how many movies I see on average. But like, it's in my top 10 already.
Mm-hmm.
And easily, because the entertainment, the immersion, and all of the craft at display coming together. Like with this film, you see the attention to detail, you see the patience that was actually taken to pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas every other film is more than content than to just like half-ass every aspect of their work because it's rushed, because it's mandated to be rushed, because then we have like, I don't know, 10 comic book films a year where their VFX are like so rushed, like they all look like fake green screens. This, you see why it took 13 years to perfect all of the things that you see in here. And to me, it is the kind of action movie in a way that I haven't seen in quite some time. Mm-hmm. You know, there is more than just action in here, I want to say, but it's like, look at the cinematography, look at the visual effects, look at the score, look at all of that, like all those pieces coming together. And I think you see this with every set piece No one understands more how to perfectly craft an action sequence than James Cameron. Mm-hmm. Because in every single last one, I was so riveted. I was so, I was arrested to its entire sequence. Like, I could not stop looking. Mm-hmm. And how it was like, again, I may be alone in this. I did feel its length. It is a long movie for sure. But it kind of flew by to me in a way because it just kept moving and moving and moving and moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were.
And even in the moment where it wasn't moving, in that, well, from moving, quote unquote, that second act, that second hour might be my favorite because there wasn't any really plot happening. It was just characters interacting mm-hmm. and interacting with the environment and the water. And that was magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I felt the length of the movie, but I was never really bored of it.
Never. No.
It's just, you know, you just you're just there. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. Like, you're just in this world, and like, you either gotta be in it or you're just not gonna care about it at all. That's really all the point of it. And that's just what's annoying me about these reviews. You know, people are saying, you know, they get bored of it. It's like, okay, that's up to you. But like, you need to calm it down as to like how much you hated it. I just don't think this movie deserves any kind of hate at all. It's just
not at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, while I don't agree, even though it bothers me, because part of me, I don't know. I think of that as one of the most entertaining experiences I've ever seen in a cinema. And yet people walk away saying they were bored and it was dull. And I'm like, man, I don't understand you. I really don't. I'm sorry. I feel sorry that that's how you felt about it. But like, this was so just joyous. And I mean, you could maybe make the argument it's just because of James Cameron's name. But like, look, when you put this in the context of the awards season, they sure as hell are not forgetting about it. Mm-hmm. Look at all those critics groups. They just screened this movie 2 weeks ago. And like, all of the critics groups, including the Golden Globes and the Critics' Choice Awards that have announced nominations, have included this movie for Best Picture and Jim Cameron for Best Director. Coming in clutch right there at the last minute with this movie and just like bumping off some names to make his way in there.
Yeah.
I've never seen a late stage entry into the award season this successful and this, pardon the word here, penetrative. Like, he just went in there, yeah. And he's in there now, and good luck getting rid of him. I feel like as far as the industry itself and the critics, they kind of, like, for the most part, or at least the critics that are voting in these bodies, have shown up for this film and supporting it. But the people that you and I were talking about were the ones that I guess were just seeing it up until now, and they were far less than enthused, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that this, you're never going to see anything else like this besides the Avatar movies or a James Cameron movie because, it's hard for me to think of anything that touches what this was able to accomplish. So, you know, holistically, this is in a league all its own. And if you're one of these people that say, well, the story isn't all that original. Most movies' stories aren't all that original. Mm-hmm. The idea that that's your main criticism, first of all, excuse me, I don't really think plot anymore these days is among the more interesting aspects of a film. That's not really why I see a movie anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember what Del Toro said, how he hates how people ask, well, what's the movie about? And nobody ever asks how it's about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a very key distinction there. And to him, one of the least interesting aspects of a movie is plot. Now, that doesn't mean that plot doesn't matter ever, but when it just feels so reductive to me when people just reduce the film and the film entirely to like, well, the story wasn't all that original,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen this before.
Yeah, that's honestly something that always annoyed me about the first Avatar movie when people said that. You know, they'll say it's Pocahontas in space or it's Dances with Wolves in space. And I'm like, when that movie came out, I had no idea what Dances with Wolves is. And I did not like Pocahontas. So like,
who did?
Yeah.
Who does? I'm sorry, Alexis. I don't know if she's probably listening to this. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But like, you know, it's, so when Avatar came out, you know, I mean, how old was I? Shit.
You were probably like, I don't know, 2 or 3. It came out in 97, I want to say, so.
Avatar, I mean.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant Pocahontas. No, Avatar came out in 2009, 13 years ago.
13 years ago, 2009. That would be, I was probably like 12. Yeah, in that time, like, I really didn't care about plot. I wanted something cool. I wanted something actiony. Right. And so this was, for a time, one of my favorite movies ever. Just because it's an alien world, aliens fighting with spaceships and all that. Like, that's super fun, you know? Mm-hmm. And so then, like, you know, the years pass and people are just like, it's Pocahontas in space. And I'm like, okay, this is the better version then, I guess. I don't know. It's just more fun.
Yeah, no, this was so much fun. And we're hoping to go see this in IMAX 3D and see how much more enhanced of that experience would be. Mm-hmm. But look, this is a film that I would urge everyone to go out and see, just if nothing else, for the experience alone. I gotta be honest, I think I really loved it. Yeah. I know I'm gonna go see it with my family because they want to see it as well. So I know I'll see this at least several more times. Yeah, that's where we are with Avatar. So I'm quite curious. I don't know if you just may have alluded to it right now, but as far as like awards season is concerned, there have been many nominations. What, if any, observations have you made about like the names that have been included in a lot of these lists that I've been sending out to you? Like, are you surprised at certain movies getting included and others not being mentioned? What say you about overall how you feel the movies that people seem to be singling out as the best of the year?
I mean, like I said, I haven't watched a lot of movies this year, sadly. So a lot of these movies, like, I just have no idea what they're even about, honestly.
What they even are.
Yeah. Yeah, like The Fabelmans, I still haven't seen. Banshees. The only one, the only one that's like not surprising is Everything Everywhere All at Once. Mm-hmm. You know, that one's dominating.
Sure.
It's been talks ever, I think, even before it came out, you know.
I mean, people have been talking about it since April. People didn't want to believe that it was actually going to happen, but the talks have, you know, been so consistent. It's showing up everywhere. It hasn't missed any nominations so far.
Yeah, and then The Whale is one, I think that's like my most anticipated movie that I'm still waiting to watch, just because Brendan Fraser, you know, he deserves all the love. It's that one, I'm really excited to see that one, and I'm hoping, I really love it. But yeah, just, I mean, I can't really say much about it. I haven't really seen any of these movies at all, and so...
Yeah, well, that's a shame because, well, I mean, there are so many really good ones here. I hear, while you enjoyed it, you didn't necessarily love Pinocchio, the Del Toro movie.
Yeah.
That was one of the ones.
Yeah, it's just, for one thing, my sister said it, you know, it was overhyped for us. I think we were just kind of too excited for it, and so my expectations were just super high and all that.
Sure.
The other thing though too, is, well, I know part of it was kind of the dialogue of it. I really don't like it when it, like a movie or show, it's cutting between the dialogue that's meant for kids and the some kind of dialogue that's meant for adults or just someone older, you know. This actually happens in, because like in the beginning of Pinocchio, you know, Geppetto's son, you know,
Carlo,
yeah, you know, he's walking around this little town that they live in and all that, and you get this dialogue of, what a great Italian boy, it's like, what a great father, you know. And I'm kind of like, oh, that's a different dialogue than what we've seen in the first couple minutes. Mm. You know, it's just like, it's very much for kids. And but then it just kind of goes into just, I guess, a little bit of just more mature dialogue and everything, and some scenes that is not for kids, I guess you could say, you know, just kind of the imagery of it, you know. And it just, it always throws me off. I see this in the Young Justice show, where every once in a while, you know, they'll say like the lesson of this episode, like right in front of the camera, basically, you know, and I'm kind of like, oh, Jesus Christ. But then in the next episode, you see someone that clearly just had sex, and I'm like, what the fuck kind of show is this? You know, it's so that just kind of throws me off with it. You know, I don't mind dialogue for kids, like the one that I just used an example of. It just, I kind of wish it was consistent throughout the movie.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand what you're feeling that way. It didn't at all occur to me. That's not even something that I was thinking of walking away from it. But no, I understand it. It's also for anybody that wants to see it. It's now on Netflix. And from what I hear, it did quite well. I think it was like the number one movie the first week it came out.
That's good.
It's really good for it. It's a really beautifully animated stop motion film.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And if nothing else, I think we can all be happy about the idea that a stop motion animated movie, which I don't think has ever won the Academy Award for Animated Feature. Certainly not in recent years, but I don't think ever.
I think Kubo was nominated, but
no. But did it win?
I don't think it won.
Wasn't it Zootopia?
If it came out the same year, probably.
Yeah, it was Zootopia, sure. Moana, and Kubo were in contention with each other.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't have won. I know I just kind of like said my being Pinocchio, but there was a lot of things though that is great about it. Like you mentioned it in the podcast, like I totally agree with you when you said that this is clearly the most personal movie for Guillermo del Toro, and like I saw that throughout the movie. I was like, holy shit, this is great, you know. And yeah, the animation is absolutely beautiful, the acting is great. I loved watching it and like going, oh, that's the one actor that he always with. Oh, that's the other actor. Like you could totally like hear it and everything. And like in the end though, like it is a beautiful story of you know, what it means about fathers and sons and what life is about and all that. Like it's still a great movie and funny.
One of the biggest surprises to me was great voice work, a great voice performance by everybody, sure, but particularly David Bradley. I never imagined him as a Geppetto.
Yeah.
And David Bradley, of course, we know from various other works like Harry Potter. He played the first Doctor in a recent Doctor Who episode. And so it's, and he, I mean, I know people also felt lukewarm about the songs. I don't know if you felt that way, but I actually really was emotionally moved by the songs.
Oh, yeah.
They're simple.
Especially the first one, honestly.
Yeah,
kind of moved me, and you hear it throughout the movie and all that. Like, it's great. You know, I didn't mind it at all.
Yeah, Alexander Desplat also delivered an amazing score, and I think it also has a really good chance of winning there too, and being nominated, I would say. I think Pinocchio will get maybe between 2 and 3 or 4 nominations. I think at one point there was some hope it would get a picture nomination because how much people love Del Toro in the industry, but it's just been too many movies since then that it's like not realistically happening any longer, which is a shame because you would think that with 10 movies, they would be able to, like, you know, acknowledge all different kinds of film, not just the same kind of ones, but there is that. And, I'm hoping to, you know, watch this film a few more times, but, I came away with it feeling exactly the kind of emotions that I wanted to feel, and even then some. And with that being said, as far as the other movies that I see here, let's see, Top Gun Maverick is a movie that is surprising for so many ways. This is a film that I think at one point Paramount wanted to dump on Paramount Plus during the pandemic, and Tom Cruise refused. And then when it came out, it made all the money in the world. It is the only movie everybody has gone out and seen. And it is universally beloved.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that there seem, and I hear a lot of podcasts, or listen to podcasts and watch a lot of shows about the people who cover this award season. And one of the things that everybody agrees on is they love this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that even though there will not be any nominations for Joseph Kosinski, who directed the movie, or Tom Cruise, who stars in the movie, at the Academy Awards, even though it won't get those key nominations, there is some way, however unlikely, that the film is so popular that it somehow ends up winning a surprise Best Picture.
Hmm.
Which would be, if nothing else, interesting. Because a film like that doesn't ever really get nominated for Best Picture, much less stand a chance to win. Mm. If somehow Top Gun were to win, it would be the first movie of its kind, like a blockbuster, basically, since the Return of the King won in, what, 2005, 2006? Mm. Which is a whole different era in and of itself. But it's been something to see, you know, this and Avatar: The Way of Water been so successful at these nominations. I'm not used to blockbusters being invited to the party, but I think it's all the better for it. I'm actually quite happy to see that. You know what has been, I guess, well, maybe it shouldn't be surprising in retrospect, because this didn't really light up the box office and it kind of felt like it went away after a while, but fuck, these people seemingly loved Elvis.
I mean, I really did like Elvis.
I liked Elvis. I'm not sure I loved it. And I don't know if it's because I have an issue with the movie. I don't think I do. Maybe it's just the overall, maybe I'm just tired of biopics. Maybe I'm just tired of musical biopics. Maybe I'm just not that big. I'm not that into Elvis. I don't know what it is, but that's not the movie that I feel at all passionate about. I also can't really say anything negative about it either. Like, I think it's really good.
Yeah, and I think we just have, like, different standards when it comes to, like, Oscar nomination stuff. If I had to choose it for a nomination, I would probably say maybe Best Editing. I don't know.
Okay. I could see that, really cool
stuff with it, especially, you know, cutting between one scene to the next when there's like a musical number on it and all that.
I mean, it's for sure going to get Austin Butler, and nobody can dispute that. One of the best performances of the whole year. And he may even win a few. No, I think for sure he's going to win. Well, you know, I can't even say for sure, but I think he has a really good chance of winning the Golden Globe for Best Actor. He might even beat Brendan Fraser, because remember, in the Golden Globes, they separate Best Actor between comedy, quote unquote comedy, that's a whole different thing, and drama. And Banshees of Inisherin, whose main competitor is Colin Farrell, has been sweeping a lot of the critics groups awards. And he's in the drama he's in the comedy category, and he'll win there. But in the drama category, Fraser and Butler will be facing off against each other. And the key difference is there. Butler's movie, Elvis, is nominated for picture and director, and Fraser's movie The Whale is not. So you can read the tea leaves there that Butler stands a better chance than Fraser at winning the Golden Globe, at least, which doesn't, the Globes are not predictive of what the Oscars do, but they can very well be influential. Because if you remember, again, for anybody listening, these people do not, you know, decide their vote based on what they think is the best of the best. They decide their vote based on who they like the best. It is, at the end of the day, a popularity contest. And what do they use to influence them? The quality of their performances? No, not necessarily. Yes, maybe in the beginning. But more so, it's the speeches that they make at these award shows, particularly the televised award shows. And when you have, when you see, I think it's the first week of January or so, when the awards happen and you have Butler and Farrell both come up and make their acceptance speeches, and Fraser is like left out of the conversation completely, then you begin to see maybe there could be a snowball effect into how it affects the best actor race. I think what's genuinely to me really exciting about this year's Oscars season is that by this point, we kind of know who's going to win, or it's down to like one or two people. I want to say that we genuinely have open races in all of the categories, except for maybe supporting actor, where I suspect Ke-Hee Kwan will have enough of a coalescence behind him where he will win all of the awards for Everything Everywhere All at Once, and rightfully deserved.
Yeah.
The other ones are going to be really fascinating, because the best actor, you have Brendan Fraser for The Whale, Austin Butler for Elvis, and you have Colin Farrell for The Banshees of Inisherin. Best actress, I feel, is going to come down between Cate Blanchett and Michelle Yeoh. That's going to be a showdown for the ages, because those, both of those are amazing. And then supporting actors is kind of open. And then with picture, okay, well, Peter asking this question, like, where are we now? Who do I think are the movies that are going to be like likely to be nominated for Best Picture? Right now, if I had to pick 10, I would say Babylon by Damien Chazelle, but barely. And I don't feel confident about that one, because it's been proven to be very divisive. Hilariously, I should tell you that Peter sent me over a when the Rotten Tomatoes score first came out a few days ago, and he was like surprised that initially it was 95%, even though like, but wait a minute, I thought this movie was so divisive. A few hours later, it went down to 65 for the critics. Anyway, so it's like, yeah, in that being said, the only reason I'm even saying that Babylon has a chance to be nominated is because, well, the Globes and the Critics' Choice kind of rescued it. It came in a lot of those categories. Also, to give you an indication of like how divisive the movie is, one critic wrote, "Just in time for the holidays, a relentless barrage of defecation, urination, regurgitation, ejaculation, fornication, asphyxiation, masturbation, exploitation, humiliation, and overstimulation."
Jesus.
That was the review. And this was attached to a tweet where someone said, "Just showed this tweet to my dad, and it sealed the deal on this being the movie we see Christmas Day."
I don't know, that's honestly like the most descriptive movie review I've ever seen that really like shows me everything. I don't know, just, like every other review I've ever like you ever showed on that on Twitter, sure, it's always just the same, like it's a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's, yeah, beautiful, it's very opaque or
this
vague.
One though, like holy shit, okay, I get what this movie is now.
No, there have been some people who've like hated this, and so we'll see how it plays, but I think it has a really good chance at the moment to be at least nominated. Now this could very easily go to The Woman King, who may or may not be, you know, going up in the rankings, but that's where it's at. So 10, Babylon, and I'm ranking these in terms of like their chances of getting in to the nomination, not winning. At 9, I have Glass Onion. Now, a week ago, I felt stronger about this. Now, it has, I think, fallen off a little bit, and I hate to say it that this one maybe has the least chance of getting into this because it's a murder mystery, and I get... a lot of people kind of view it as a quote unquote comedy only. So it's like, if I know these people, that could be a big ding against the movie, which is sad to say. But it's about to come back on Netflix, by the way, December 23rd, which you haven't seen it yet. And no, Glass Onion.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's right. Glass Onion.
You have seen it?
Yeah.
When did you say you saw it?
I saw it with Ale.
You guys never mentioned you saw the movie.
Yeah, no, actually, I remember now. I listened to your
review.
To your review, and you mentioned that I hadn't seen it, and I was like, "Vale, correct them. I saw it with you." I thought that was weird, but yeah, I did watch it.
She wasn't on that podcast, I think.
Really?
No, I think it was Kyle, or maybe she was. I don't know, but it's like we did a show a month back where we reviewed both Fablemans and Knives and Glass Onion. Okay, well, that movie had a lot of talk and then it disappeared because it went away. It'll be back on streaming Well, it'll be debuting on streaming for Netflix, and we'll see how that one goes. But I really do think it's a strong contender, and especially since Janelle Monáe has been appearing in a lot of these lists for Best Supporting Actress, so that gives it a big boost. The one movie I haven't seen here is Women Talking by Sarah Polley, and let me tell you what that one's about, because it's hard to describe. It says a group of women in an isolated religious colony struggled to reconcile their faith with a string of sexual assaults committed by the colony's men. And this stars Rooney Mara, Claire Foy, Jesse Buckley, Ben Whishaw, and many others. I haven't seen this one. I've been trying to see it. I have not seen it. It's kind of gotten weaker as the weeks have gone by. And I'm not quite sure if it'll get in here, but at the moment I'll put it in. However, the rest of these movies, I think it's kind of a done deal. They are going to get in. So these next seven films are Elvis, Avatar The Way of Water, Top Gun Maverick, Tar, that's the one with Cate Blanchett, The Banshees of Inisherin, The Fablemans, and Everything Everywhere All at Once. I think those are the ones that are getting in. And quite frankly, not really mad at it. I think this is one of the better lists for picture. That's the case, because I happen to like all those movies, and I happen to really like six of those seven movies. And I'll just say this. I hope you find the time to see Banshees and Fablemans, because I love both of those movies, and I've kind of been like thinking nonstop about them for like weeks now. Both movies I had the chance to enjoy several times at the theaters, so you can tell I've been spending a lot of money recently, but hey, I'm not complaining. They were well worth it. That's where I'm at. So before we go, let's discuss some of the things that you had not had a chance to talk about just yet, which would include, I believe, films like Wakanda Forever.
I enjoyed it.
Can you believe though, it's been like over a month since that happened?
Yeah, feels like forever.
It really does, in a way.
I did enjoy it more than the first one, for sure. Yes, it was just I don't know. I think I just really kind of liked that they did kind of take care about the whole thing of Chadwick Boseman's death and all that. I really like that. I really like Namor, actually. I don't know, I just found it to be a cool villain. I loved his world and everything. But I mean, overall though, it was just it was an okay movie.
It's not really stuck with me at all.
Yeah, honestly, I'm having trouble remembering the movie, like, even now.
No, same. I mean, think
that kind of tells you.
I mean, I liked it in the moment, and I had a lot of nice things to say about it, but, like, I also said, I don't know how much of this is going to stay with me, and we're a month later, and, like, it didn't really.
Yeah, so it's a tough review for me to say. But, yeah, I just remember kind of liking how they did take care of Chadwick Boseman's death. I know some people complain, like, that they should have replaced him and all that, but I mean you just gotta understand, at that moment people were like, don't you dare, you know, and they were making the movie, they had to make the movie because they already delayed it because of that. And so it's just, it is what it is, you know, and they couldn't come up with a decision right away, you know.
Well, so that to the side, Andor though,
oh my dude, oh my gosh, I fucking love this show. This is one of the, out of all the Disney Plus shows, I think this is the one that I really want to rewatch the most.
One of the ones that's actually rewatchable,
for sure, especially, you know, when you go back, you know, you'll probably see some more things that, like, now that you know the ending, it's probably gonna be so much better. But yeah, that final episode was absolutely great. I love Marvel's speech.
Yes,
that scene, I almost cried about it, and just afterwards though too, when Andor saves the one lady, is like the love interest, she says, I saw Marva, and he goes, wasn't she great? And I'm like, oh, that's so good. And then, oh my gosh, that one line of what is it, he talks to the robot, what is it, B something,
I forget myself, it's B something,
yeah, the I say BMO, but that's an Adventure Time character. well, he talks to the little robot friend of his, and he's just like, I need you to take care of them. Watch over them for me. He's like, you always say that, and you always pull through. And I'm like, oh, God, that's so great. This is so good. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, this is by far one of the best Star Wars content
that
we've gotten. And I can't wait for the second season. I hope they make more of this. And I fucking love the fact that, you know, people keep saying, like, oh, these past Star Wars stuff have been shit because they don't care about the source material and all that. It's like, hey, this guy does not give two shits about the source material, okay? He just wanted to make a story.
And he did.
Yeah. And, you know, any little Easter eggs that you find there, he had no idea about it, okay? He doesn't care. It doesn't matter whether you care about the source material or not. You just need good writers.
Yep.
That's really all you need.
And that's the truth. That is very much the truth. Oh, did you happen to see The Crown?
No. I finished, what is it? It's just the fifth season, right? That we're on. I finished the fourth season. I watched the first episode of the first season.
The fifth one. Yeah, okay.
And I haven't caught up since. it was funny because I finally finished the fourth season after the fifth season comes out. And now I can't. I don't have the strength. Honestly, like, the reason why I haven't watched that many movies and some shows is because I've been obsessed with the video game that I've been playing.
No. Yeah, oh, no. Don't tell me that. What about the World Cup?
The World. No, not that.
No, okay.
It's just been video games.
Video games? Oh, no.
Yeah, it's God of War. A new one came out, God of War Ragnarok, and I finally played the 2018 version since I have a PlayStation.
Okay.
And I actually did an episode on it on my other podcast, West Center.
Well, again, okay, that would make more sense then for why that's taking up your time.
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you then. We'll do a quick rundown of films that you haven't seen Tar then?
No.
Have you seen Smile?
Yes.
Barbarian. You saw Smile. Okay, did you enjoy it?
Hell yeah, dude. It was good. It was scary. I think my one complaint was the ending. I feel like this should be a rule in all horror movies. Do not use CGI. Like, if you're gonna make your monster practical, practical. You know, it's just.
I think it was too ridiculous, too cartoonish.
Too cartoonish, but also
because scared the hell out of me. I was horrified by it. It was disgusting. It's
scary. Like, and when you get those close-ups of the face and everything, like that shit. It's giving me an image right now. Oh my god.
Yeah.
It's just that because they're putting in a lot more money on some other things. The CGI, I think, comes last in those movies, and it's not great. You know, and so it's just, if you're gonna make like a big monster, try to figure out a way to make it practical. You know. That's really all my complaint.
So your sister was here over the weekend and she collected your gifts. Did she tell you that I tried giving her a poster I had of Smile and she rejected it? She was like, nope.
Yeah, yeah. And I got your gifts too. I'm actually really excited to read.
Oh, you got it. You got it. Good, good.
I wanted to text you.
Did you open it? Because I didn't see any of the art that was in there.
Oh, really? Yeah, I opened it real quick and... already just like the cover here, sketch drawings of the seven dwarves and everything, and it's just a lot of really cool pictures, some posters.
It was a really good find at one of the, I think it was Comics and Things in San Diego, and this was the, what he's talking about, what he's holding up there is the Walt Disney Archives art book from 1920 something, I believe, to 1960 something.
1921 to 1968.
Which is pretty much up until the death of Walt Disney, which is a pretty massive period of Disney. So you opened your other one then?
Yeah, the Star Wars poster. He gave me another one that was like a Marvel one. I put it there, and so I'm just trying to figure out like where can I put this.
That's the problem over the years. Like I find a lot of good stuff, but it's like, well... In my mind, I think, well, where are you going to put this stuff? And they're like, oh, that's not my problem. That'll be their problem to figure out. Okay, so what about Barbarian?
Barbarian, no.
That one's on HBO Max right now. Pearl. With Mia Goth. It's a horror movie.
No.
Okay. The Woman King.
No.
Bros.
No.
Okay. Good luck to you, Leo Grand.
No.
The Light and Magic, the documentary on Disney Plus.
No.
Because that one you should make a point to see more than the other ones. I think you'd like them, but that one is really good.
Mm-hmm. There is. Oh, wait, hold on. Yes. I'm sorry. Light and Magic. That's some. Do you say it was on Disney Plus?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, my bad. I was thinking of the one on YouTube.
No, this is about Industrial Light and Magic.
Okay. No, it's just, I saw that one that's on YouTube. The one about about that thing.
Oh, that one is the Disney Channel theme, History and Mystery. You saw that one?
Yeah.
What did you make of that one?
Oh my gosh, that was so good. It is incredible. Yes. Honestly, like what he did. I never thought would be so invested in like
trying to figure out a never. Theme.
And just there's a twist towards the end.
Yes.
That like I can't, I won't spoil it. Like you gotta watch it. Honestly, you know, it's all about just a theme that you hear, that you've always heard on Disney Channel, that da 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 da. And you know, if you're listening, you're probably thinking like, whatever. No, it's good. It's very interesting trying to figure it, seeing this guy trying to figure it out and all that. And when you do, it's honestly incredible.
I was blown away by it. I think to me, it is the best documentary this year.
Mm-hmm.
It is the best documentary film this year. I think that's not one to be at all ignored or forgotten about, because it also just, it is surprisingly moving at the end of the day. And I think that element makes it all the more special.
Mm-hmm.
So that one, but the other one I mentioned, Light and Magic, which is the documentary on how Industrial Light and Magic, the visual effects company, came to be. That one is not to be missed. So I would check that one out. Neither is the Lucy and Desi, but that again, you have to be interested in Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. But that one is also very good. Other films to look out for would be After Sun. This is for your record if you wanted to look, but listen back. Decision to Leave, The Whale, obviously. There is Bowie, Moon Age Daydream. That documentary is also, I believe, still in some theaters play. I'm not sure if it's out just yet. Babylon. There's, spoiler alert, I believe that's with Jim Parsons. Triangle of Sadness, Causeway, All Quiet on the Western Front, which I did see yesterday. This is the remake of the Best Picture winner, the German remake, All Quiet on the Western Front. It's a war movie. I feel so bad how like reductive that comment is, but it's like, it's a war movie. It does all the good things war movies do, and those don't really, I don't know, they don't light me up at all. But let's see here. You still haven't, there's no Nope, right? Let's see here. You did see Dragon Ball Super Superhero. Yeah, that one for sure is not to be missed. And you saw RRR.
Yes. Oh,
okay. Let me see. I think that should do right about now. But yeah, there's a lot of movies out there. I'll share with you a list if you'd like of, not that you need to, not that I will either way, but there's a list that I've been making on Letterboxd about the number of films that have come out, and it's, you know, it's kind of substantial, but yeah, that's where we are. Let me see here. As we, you know, move ahead into the new year, how would you say this year has been like for you in terms of like film and television? How do you think the quality of this year has compared to those of, you know, recent years?
I feel like this one is probably the most like ups and downs that I've ever had. You know, it's just you watch one movie and you think, man, that's really good, but then the next one is just that's rough. But I mean, in turn, that's just for movies at least. You know, like I was looking through what I've seen while doing this podcast, and I've only seen 23 movies this year. So far, at least. No, 24. Avatar, I haven't added Avatar yet. And I'm looking at my list and I'm like, damn, did I even have a top 10?
Probably not now. Like, I think you need to just watch the movies that you haven't seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, really the only one that, like, I'm excited to put on my list is Top Gun.
Sure.
Everything Everywhere and RRR.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, like, they're good. I'm just kind of like, I know there's better movies out there, though.
Yeah, there are better movies out there. And what you have been seeing, though, are the amazing television shows this year.
Mm-hmm. Television shows. I know. Yeah, I mean, we saw House of the Dragon and Andor.
Peacemaker.
Peacemaker, for sure. I saw Wednesday, actually. That was
on. Yeah, people have been Netflix. Liking that one a lot, yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Oh, Stranger Things.
Yeah, Stranger Things. That one was really great, too. I feel like... you probably didn't watch this. The Sandman.
People love it. I didn't see it. People loved it.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I think they did a really good job adapting it. Mm. Like, it's pretty damn close. But yeah, also, yeah, not a lot of shows too. Only got 15. Weird. Yeah, I think
Shows take a lot more time.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, for sure, like top ones is House of the Dragon, Andor. I started watching this comedy one called Ghost. Mm. That one's honestly kind of hilarious. It's really funny.
Oh, I should have told you. I think you might like this one. Abbott Elementary.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of good things about that one.
I actually, I think it was a month ago, I binged the first season on HBO Max. Mm. Love it. I love really? It. And it's like, I kind of, and maybe it was made for me because I'm kind of a teacher now. And so it's about teachers, basically, in elementary school. And it's like, oh my God, this is so true and so hilarious.
That's funny.
But it's so funny, too. And all the characters are just like lovable in their own little ways. And so I haven't seen season two yet, but I've seen all of season one. And it's like 13 episodes, I think, the first season, like half hour comedy. So it like flies by. But it's really good. I really liked Abbott Elementary.
Mm. I started watching Willow.
That's out already?
Yeah, it's out.
Oh, okay.
I'm enjoying it, but there's quite a few problems.
I'm sure there are.
Yeah, it's just... I mean, the biggest thing that was like a really standout was the costumes in the fantasy world. It looks too clean. It looks kind of modern. And it's not really working.
I wonder why.
That was this one thing that I didn't notice at first, but like... I couldn't believe it when I actually saw it. But one of the main characters, she's a fighter. She uses a sword and everything. And I barely noticed that she has like a quiver behind her, like she's carrying it. And she, for one thing, she's only carrying 4 arrows. Mm. You know, she's on a quest and she's only got 4 arrows. Why? But then I'm like, why is she carrying a quiver in the first place? She's a swordsman, mm-hmm. whatever the fuck. You know, and I'm just like, what's up with all these little details that they're getting wrong? You know, and so that's just one thing that's kind of bothering me. I don't know. We'll see in the end. Hopefully I can enjoy
Let me ask you this before we go. Did you guys like Glass Onion or not?
Glass Onion? Yeah, we loved it.
Okay. For sure. Because I feel like you guys haven't mentioned it, and it made me feel like, well, maybe you didn't like it. Because I'd be like...
Oh, no. Oh, weird. I don't know. I think...
Like, you guys never addressed it at all, like you saw it.
Well, a part of it, though, is because we saw it before you guys, and we just kind of,
oh,
like,
did you?
This is the one, yeah.
Oh.
Because this is the one we kind of didn't want to give our thoughts for
right,
sure.
Right, because one, of
yeah.
this one,
and
yeah.
Just, yeah, we just never did. So, but, yeah, no, we absolutely loved it. It was so much fun. I can't wait to rewatch it, honestly, because there's a couple things that I really want to see, just like little details in the movie that I kind of like want to go over again, you know,
and a lot of stuff is in there. You know, the one that when Kyle was like, the one that got me so much was like the sweatpants joke. The sweatshop joke.
Sweatshop. Oh my God.
That was Kate Hudson's character.
Yeah, man.
It's so good. I really hope, that movie is recognized with some nominations. Come, you know, the announcement morning, but Glass Onion is definitely not at all to be missed. Also, I throw in Bob's Burgers movie in there as well. So, as another movie to look out for, but yeah, I feel like, for me personally, of the 64 movies I've seen, I can say that I've liked... 52. Love is a different thing altogether, and I would say that begins with, we'll say 20 out of 64. Maybe I was just avoiding a lot of the clunkers, but like, there've been some movies this year that have been like pretty terrible. Black Adam, of course, included. Halloween Ends was awful. The Jurassic World Dominion, one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life. Uncharted with Tom Holland. Cannot believe he allows himself to continue being. I mean, the thing is, it's not an outwardly bad movie. And I know you liked it. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed moments of it. It just felt so generic.
Yeah, I get you.
That's what it is. And I'm not saying that anyone's actively bad in it. It's just like, I feel in some ways it was trying to be a movie of like how they would make that in the past. Like when the Mummy movies came out with Brendan Fraser, it kind of felt like it was trying to be a little bit of that, but didn't come at all anywhere near it. So I was just frankly kind of bored with it. I mean, Disenchanted, I don't know if you saw that one, but that was actively abysmal.
Yeah,
actively abysmal.
A part of me wants to watch it, but I don't.
Kyle turned it off after 10 minutes.
That sucks.
Yeah, no, there's no point. Then, of course, there's The Secrets of Dumbledore. And it's no secret, nobody liked that movie.
Mm-hmm.
It crashed and burned.
I did watch Hocus Pocus.
That was good.
Too.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Good. I really enjoyed it.
I mean, the expectations were not high at all.
No.
But hey, it barely passed by. But yeah, I can say that I enjoyed myself with that one. You know what I will say, though? I'm going to say it right now. I think Lightyear is the worst movie Pixar's ever made.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. I'm going to say that right now because I don't... There's nothing to that movie.
Mm.
With Incredibles 2, I can at least say there was moments of entertainment and joy.
Oh, for sure. In the action.
Yeah. Stuff. Lightyear is just like... What a nothing movie.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway... That's where we're going to leave it. Thank you, David, for being here. I guess we will see you soonish or in the new year. We're not going to have anything special as far as like the end of 2022. But of course, if those of you who are listening can gauge that not all of us have caught up on all the movies just yet. So I would expect don't expect anything until I would say March. Let's just say for a top 10 show of the year. That's usually the safest bet. Anyway, of course, you can catch our podcasts every Sunday, anywhere you listen to podcasts. And until next time, stay under our spotlight. Bye-bye.
Bye.